Our full year results being 31st of March 2015. We're going to follow the normal agenda we always do. Chris will take you through a detailed review of the numbers, and then I'll come back with some commentary about each of our divisions. I will orient my commentary to the transformation plan we outlined at our Capital Markets Day, because I do want to give you a clear sense of what we've accomplished this year and what's still ahead of us. Before I turn over to Chris, though, I thought I'd just touch on some headlines. Most importantly, the headline numbers we provided our pre-close are unchanged. Trading is in line with our expectation, though there's some movement among our divisions, and we'll cover that as we go through the detailed results. We were very pleased by the momentum we see in both U.K. bus and student, as well as the relatively strong cash generation we saw across the business. We signed the direct awards for First Great Western and TPE, and we welcomed Wolfhart Hauser to our board. Wolfhart will be taking over as chairman from John McFarland at our AGM in July. Going forward, in the year ahead, we see a year where the strong performance in our non-rail businesses will largely make up for the drop-off in profits from rail that comes from ScotRail and First Capital Connect cycling out of our portfolio. It's really this momentum in these two businesses, which we have to remember consume most of our invested capital, that's going to drive our business in the coming year, and that actually gives us the confidence that we will hit our medium-term targets, as we'll review with you today. So with that, I'll turn it over to Chris to take you through the numbers.
Thanks, Tim. Good morning, everybody. So in the usual way, I'll set out the key financial themes for the year and give you some color on the numbers. After covering the capital structure, I'll also comment on the cash flow for the year and how I see that developing in the future. So if I start with the key headlines, as Tim mentioned, our operating profit was in line with our expectations at £304 million, an increase of 13%. And that, together with the lower interest costs, has led to an increase in the attributable profit of 48%. On cash, we delivered at the upper end of our expectations with an inflow of £39 million before the Capital Connect and ScotRail end of franchise working capital outflows. Those amounted to £108 million between the two of them, and they were higher than our guidance of £70 million, principally due to timing. And we now expect the outflow in 15-16, which is mainly associated with ScotRail, to be only £30 million, so 30. Net debt was at £1.4 billion, and that was due in part to the year-end US dollar exchange rate. And overall leverage, EBITDA to net debt, remained flat at 2.25 times. If I exclude rail, which, as you know, is broadly self-financing, we invested £349 million in capital during the year, and that was mainly in fleet and in the transformation projects. And as you know, return on capital employed is a key focus for us, and if I exclude the impact of exchange, it improved from 8.2% to 8.5%. And our focus remains on achieving the 10 to 12% medium-term target that we previously discussed. So a little bit more detail now on the financial results. Reported revenue for the year was 10% lower. As we explained at the half-year update in November, there are a number of structural reasons for this, and I'll come back to that in a moment. Underlying revenue increased by 4%. EBITDA was up 8%, and as I mentioned, operating profit up 13%. Overall, the group margin increased from 4% to 5%, and I'll come back to each of the divisions in a moment, but the increase in margin is principally driven by the transformation programs in student and in bus, together with improved rail performance. Interest costs are lower, mainly due to the refinancing of our bank debt, rebalancing the mix between fixed and floating rate debt, refinancing some of our finance leases, and making just more efficient use of our cash balances. EPS increased by 31%, and in part was impacted in the previous year by the dilution impact of the rights issue. And as I mentioned, attributable profit increased by 48%. There are a number of non-trading items which we've pulled out separately to clarify the performance of each of the divisions. And you'll find the detail in the back of your packs. But other than the usual amortization of intangibles, the net number is very small. And they're the same numbers that we talked about at the half year, principally the gain on property disposals, mainly Miami, and also the write-off of some very old, pre-Laid Law days, legal claims and IT licenses. So if I turn now to the revenue, and I mentioned a number of structural changes which are driving the 10% reduction in revenue. And again, these are principally the same line items that we talked about at the half year and have, just to emphasize, no impact on profitability. As I said, same items as the half year, other than obviously the first Capital Connect franchise ending in September. So if I just quickly run through each line item, the reduction in revenue support in First Great Western and Capital Connect, £237 million, was offset by lower premium payments. Similarly, the reduction of £217 million in First ScotRail subsidy was offset by lower track access charges. In UK bus, and again, similar, exactly the same as at the half year, there was a £56 million revenue reduction that related to the businesses that we disposed of last year, principally London. And we took the profit out of the previous year numbers, so there's no year-on-year impact on profit. So if I adjust for exchange, the underlying revenue, as I mentioned, is just over 4%, with each of the divisions other than Greyhound making forward progress. Before I turn to the individual divisional performance, just a quick reminder on fuel and on FX. Due to a combination of pass-through contracts and our hedging strategy, our cost base is not very sensitive to fuel price changes. Of course, the oil price changes, as we've seen in Greyhound, does have an impact on the demand. And that's particularly the case, as we saw this year, when changes are large but also happen over a very short period of time. Secondly, I remind you on FX, our operating profits that are earned in dollars clearly have a translation impact, but that's mitigated by the dollar-denominated fuel costs in bus and in rail, together with some dollar-denominated interest and tax costs. And more details on both of those subjects are included in the back of your pack. So if I now turn to each of the divisions, again, in the back of your packs are the detailed bridges that I know a number of you like to go through. But if I just give you the key moving parts now, on this slide you have the sterling numbers on the top of the slide and the dollar numbers on the bottom of the slide. And as I mentioned earlier, the key improvement within margin is driven in part by students' 1% margin increase. And that's principally driven by the success we had in the 2014 bid season, together with some organic growth, as well as the makeup of weather days from the particularly severe weather conditions that we had in the previous year. We've also achieved $19 million of cost savings, and that's out of our total $50 million cost-saving program that we'll achieve over the next couple of years. Our progress was partially offset by pockets of driver shortages, in parts of our business. And, of course, at this stage in our transformation, the vast majority of our contracts are still experiencing cost inflation ahead of price indexation that we've explained previously. And over time, obviously, that position reverses. Turning now to transit, 5.5% revenue growth, and that was actually at the top end of our expectations, principally driven by good organic growth within existing contracts. The division has continued to deliver, in our view, good margins, especially when you take account of the low capital requirement in that business. In the year we've just finished, there wasn't a major impact on service levels for the Canadian tar sands, but looking forwards, we do expect to see some contraction in that business in 15-16, and that's within the shuttle segment of that business. Greyhound revenues for the year were a shade behind last year, and as you know, it's very much a story of two halves, with good growth in the first half, and then following the oil price changes, declines in the second half. To mitigate this reduction in demand, as well as obviously normal inflation, we have actively managed our cost base, and you'll see from the bridges at the back of the book a significant cost efficiency number. Nevertheless, despite those actions, margins declined slightly year on year, and within the Greyhound, I forgot to mention it earlier, Greyhound Express has actually remained very resilient with like-for-like growth at 3%. Tim will update you in due course on the progress we're making with the transformation program. On the transformation in UK bus, that continues to move forward well. Overall like-for-like volume growth was 1.1%. But as we've talked about previously, the key within that division is what's happening with commercial passenger growth, and volume growth there was 2.6%. And that really reflects the benefits from the changes in the passenger timetables, networks, and fares that we've been putting in over the last year or so. Having passed the anniversary dates for several of those actions, the majority of our business is now achieving positive yield, and we grew like-for-like revenue by 2.3%. Our focus for the whole group, as it is for the whole group, does remain on cost efficiencies. And within bus, we achieved £15 million of saving, an encouraging acceleration to the £6 million that we achieved in bus within the first half. Clearly, there remains a long way to go, but we're encouraged with the progress so far. And we will look on a market-by-market basis of how we can make further acceleration. In UK Rail, as I explained earlier, a number of structural reasons for the change in the revenue number. Operationally, Rail continues to deliver with a 6.7% like-for-like revenue growth, and that's underpinned by strong volume growth at 4.2%, both of which were an acceleration from the half year. On a year compared with year basis, also First Great Western benefits from being on full commercial terms for the full year. Set against that, of course, is the First Capital Connect came to an end in September, and ScotRail franchise ended on the 1st of April, and therefore clearly rail earnings will be significantly impacted in 15-16. As I've mentioned on previous occasions, we have taken certain costs centrally in the group items line on the chart. These included, for example, increased investment in our training and development programs, investment in increased numbers of apprentices and graduates, just to give some examples. And as I mentioned, we took these costs centrally to make sure that they were driven forward at this stage within the transformation. I would expect these costs to go back to more normal levels, and for 15-16, I would expect the group items charge to be more closer to the 14-15 number, to the 13-14 number than 14-15. Turning now to cash flow, and the chart shows you the key items. Just to remind you of how we've guided this in the past, we said for 13-14, 14-15, and 15-16, across those 3 years, before the franchise outflows, cash flow would essentially be flat. In 13-14, it was positive $27 million. You can see from the chart over on the right-hand side, in 14-15, it's positive $39 million. And I would expect 15-16 to be flat to slightly positive. If I walk along the slide, you can see the cash expenditure on CapEx. And because the rail CapEx is effectively self-funding, is purely a timing issue, we've pulled that out separately. You can see the benefit of the disposal proceeds, and as I mentioned earlier, that's principally Graham Miami. And pensions, working capital movements, and the spend on provisions have all improved compared with the previous year. And set against that, is the right over on the right-hand side are the cash outflows associated with the franchise outflows that I mentioned earlier. And just to emphasize, that number will be $30 million in 15-16. I will talk more about expectations for future cash flows in a few minutes. But just before that, a word on CapEx. And again, as you've seen in previous years, the majority of our CapEx is on the various fleets and also on the transformation programs. Underlying CapEx, underlying investment in CapEx, I expect to be at 1.2 times as we previously guided. And then we will also continue to bring up our IT systems to best-in-class standard and also spend on the transformation programs. So our overall financing position or balance sheet. We believe that strengthened during the year, particularly with the new revolving credit facility, the £800 million facility, and obviously it remains underpinned by the long-term bond program. Our average debt maturity is good at 5.2 years. As I mentioned earlier, we have taken a number of actions to reduce the interest cost this year. But the key changes come towards the end of the, or as the bond program starts to unwind. And as you can see from the profile, that first happens in 2018. So just before coming back to some comments on cash, on this slide, it's just a reminder of our medium-term objectives, which to emphasize remain unchanged. And Tim will take you through our progress towards those in a few minutes. But before doing that, I just wanted to give you a sense of how those apply to our cash going forwards. And the slide shows the various moving parts. The key driver to our cash flow going forwards is the improvement in EBITDA, or in other words, the margin targets that we're aiming for that we've talked about over the last year or so. And it's all about the implementation of those transformation programs. Secondly, as I just mentioned, once we get to 2018 and the higher cost bonds start to roll off, then we will also then start to get benefit in terms of cash from lower interest costs. I expect CapEx, steady state CapEx, our investment to remain at 1.2 times depreciation, with additional CapEx as required, depending upon growth opportunities and the development of the group at that time. Otherwise, the other moving parts are, again, as I've spoken previously, I expect to get a boost once we've totally unwound the CapEx creditor I've talked about previously. And then other items, for example, working capital, insurance, pension, cash flows, I'd expect to remain broadly unchanged from the chart that I put up earlier going forwards. Cash tax, I'd expect to increase, but only modestly because of the tax losses that we have in the business. So overall, a number of moving parts, but hopefully I've got across the key one is the improvement in the EBITDA and the benefits of the transformation programs. So I'll now hand you back to Tim, who will take you through how we're getting on with these various programs. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris. So as I said in the opening, I really wanted to set these comments in light of the transformation program. So I want to start with a summary, division by division, of the strategy we outlined at the Capital Markets Day that was going to drive the transformation of the business. So it starts at student. So we said we were going to have to pull the business back and make sure it was only participating in markets and districts where we could earn a fair return, and we were going to continue the application of standardization across the entire list of companies within student in order to drive efficiencies. We said this two-pronged approach would deliver double-digit margins within the planned term. In transit, we said we would maintain growth and margins. We would preserve our really industry-leading position, which we demonstrated year after year. In Greyhound, we said two things. We said, one, we would complete the recapitalization of that business, which had started previously. That meant the entire fleet, all buses, either rebuild or new. It meant resizing the terminal footprints so it's appropriate to the base load of business that we carry, and it meant really driving to a variable cost structure so that we could flex the business in response to challenges from the economy. The second thing we said we would do is we would take the lessons that we'd learned in Bolt Bus and Greyhound Express with yield management and more friendly customer-facing practices, and we would apply those to the business at large and allow us to break out of simply taking what the economy gives us to be able to drive growth on our own terms. In UK Bus, we said we had to completely retool and rebuild. That meant we had to pour a lot of money into new buses in order to improve the presentation to the public, in order to lower the annual maintenance expense we were facing, and quite frankly, in order to just be able to meet the accessibility requirements under European law. We said we had to force disciplined operations across the entire business, number one, to drive further efficiencies, but number two, just so that the product, the service we were putting out there had the level of reliability that we could be part of everybody's habits, everybody's routine to drive growth. And finally, we said we had to completely recast the commercial offer. Put simply, we had to have a competitive fare structure out there that was capable of generating growth. We said if we did all of this, we could return the UK bus business to a business that could deliver growth in volume and in revenues, and in doing that, restore double-digit margins in the business. And finally, in rail, we said we would continue to focus on driving operational improvements and volume growth in our existing franchises, and we would set about restocking our portfolio as these franchises come up for further bid. We said our objective over time, subject to that franchising schedule, was to get back to 100 million pounds of EBIT from our rail portfolio. So let's look at what happens in the year and what's still ahead of us. Okay, turning first to students. So it was this two-pronged strategy, this 50 million in additional efficiencies we need to deliver over the planned period, which is on top of the $100 million worth of efficiencies we already drove through our M1 program, and the more aggressive bidding that we think is required in order to get a fair deal for the services we provide. So we reviewed with you previously the success we had last year, where the average price increase we got on our rebid business was 4.5%. And remember, the thing that was remarkable about that achievement was the unusually high level of retention, 90%. And I emphasize for comparison purposes, that 90% is calculated where the denominator is the buses up for bid in this year. Other people quote a retention rate, but they're talking about all the businesses in their, all the buses in their fleet. Ours is a much more conservative presentation. But the combination of that 4.5% price increase, which we enjoyed for part of the year, with the 19 million of savings that we have gotten of the 50 million commitment on the multi-year program, allowed us to do as we predicted we should be able to do, and that is take the 38% of contracts that were in an unsatisfactory, low-yielding bucket and drive that number to below 30%. Now, the fact is, had it not been for us getting hit by a storm in the very last month of the year that covered half the United States, the margin we would have posted actually would have been a few tenths of a margin point above it. And through the year, we had to confront two other challenges that we've talked about before, but actually increased in intensity through the year. One was, as Chris mentioned, driver shortages. As the U.S. economy has improved, that has become more of a challenge for us to overcome. And the second is the way the sharp drop in fuel prices played through the application of some of these arcane CPI increase formulas that are in our existing contracts. Last time we were together, we talked a lot about this phenomenon of inadequate increases on multi-year contracts. This just made it worse. But those are just challenges. You just have to deal with it. And that's our attitude. We just have to cover it off. We have to stick to the plan and work the plan. So we went to even more aggressive bidding this year. And I'm pleased to say that we are 60% through the repricing of our portfolio this year, and our price increases on average are well above 5%. So we're doing better than we did last year. And it when we consider the fact that we will be delivering what we believe is the balance of the $50 million savings, you can see why we feel a confidence as we go forward. Now, it is true that in this year we're in, $17 million of profit will be shifted into the next year simply because of the way our fiscal year sits on top of the school year and where when the holidays hit. But the fact that we will have the full cumulative effect of the 4.5% price increase, we have the price increases of an even higher level we're achieving this year, and we have that money out in front of us, which will get that $17 million comes back to us in the following year, you can see why we feel a real sense of momentum in student as we go forward and have a renewed sense of confidence that this is one of the major strengths we have in hitting our medium-term targets. First Transit, well, we had a stronger year than we had signaled to you, certainly 12 months ago and 6 months ago. And the reason we had signaled that we weren't going to have this level of performance as we had flagged that there were two very large contracts that were cycling out and they were going to hit us on the top line. What we didn't expect was how strong our organic growth was within our existing contracts, and the team has really done a very good job. Now, we do have to be mindful, though, of the fact that there was some erosion in our margin, but still within the band that our plan called for, and that was because some of the business that made up for business that cycled out was of a lower margin. The mix was very different. You know, there's five different businesses in student, and you do get this mix change over the year. Now, as Chris already mentioned, we're very mindful of the cutbacks in the oil sands fields in Alberta. That's a very big book of business for us, and the low oil prices and the cutbacks there really hit us in two ways. One is the existing sites, which will continue to produce. You know, these are big customers, and they are demanding belt tightening because of current conditions, and you have to tighten your belt when those demands come. But probably more profoundly is the fact that we do a big business in supporting the construction trade, the expansion to new sites. We move the workers in and out, and that's really been a great business for us. And that's been pretty much completely shut down in the current pricing environment. Now, we still think we have the best team. We think, you know, they'll hold their own through what is for them a relatively challenging year. But at least for this 1 year, we do have to temper our growth expectations for transit in order to let this change in the oil sands business kind of play through the numbers. So Greyhound was the one business that really had kind of the unexpected big challenges this year, which was the drop in fuel prices and obviously the impact that had on the competitive position of the private automobile versus people getting on our coaches. if there is a silver lining to what we confronted, it is the fact that, you know, almost every time, well, every time we've talked, we keep referring to the development of a cost variable structure in Greyhound and the transformation that has been created over time. And the performance this year certainly proved that, because notwithstanding the intense pressure the business was under in the last quarter and about half of the third quarter of the year, they were able to hold the reduction in margin to just half a percentage point. Now, if there is continuing low oil prices for as far as we can see into the future, it is quite possible, depending on what happens with what we do with yield management, it's quite possible that our hitting the 12% margin target will be delayed. However, I want to emphasize a point here. Greyhound U.S. makes very nice margins right now and is cash generative to the group. So even in a low oil price environment, this can be a very good business. Whether we hit the 12% turns to the second half of the story, and that is what happens when we get the yield management tools and the customer-facing changes in place. We're very excited that our progress in that regard is exactly as we predicted. We're developing these items now. We'll be rolling them out in the second half of the year, as we predicted. We've strengthened the management team by bringing in executives from the airline industry who are really helping us develop the algorithms that will drive the very complex fare structure across the entire North America and Greyhound. And it is a question of stay tuned. We will see in the second half as we start to unveil this new way of doing business. UK Bus really performed this year. As Chris said, we stood in front of you at the first half, and we said we had delivered $6 million in efficiencies. And at that time, I said to you, we need to double that number in the second half. Of course, when I said that to you, I was trying to, you know, really send the message, hey, this is a steep hill to climb, and everybody has to understand how tough this is. Well, in fact, we did better than that. And when you consider the fact that we have now hit the 25th consecutive period of volume growth in fare-paying passengers, which leads the entire industry, and that First Group had not grown fare-paying passengers for a decade before this run started, you can see that this change really is genuine, that the what is happening in UK Bus is a very real turnaround in the business. Now, like the whole bus industry, this isn't a First Group issue, like the whole bus industry, we have to confront the fact that concessionary volumes are down. But and that certainly points up that the challenge for this continuing turnaround is all about growth. It's making sure we add the growth. But we still feel quite confident that what we're doing is very real. So we hit our target for the transformation this year. But I think more important for the outlook is the fact that we really pass the glass over every route, every market, as we've done this, because we want to be sure that we concentrate our resources in those markets where there really is a prospect of long-term success and sustainable growth. And we will continue to be flexible as we consider where we're best placed to put our investment. The point I want to flag for you is, though, any costs associated with further repositioning of our bus business will simply be absorbed within our commitments, because we're only going to do this if we can accelerate our hitting the goals we've already put in front of you. So we'll continue to follow the formula we talked about in the past. That is, we'll keep driving the kinds of efficiencies we drove through this year. We will add volume to the existing network that's out there, and we will enjoy price increases that are competitive, that is, competitive in the market, and that will offset the inflationary pressures we see. We'll follow this path while continuing to push the partnerships out in the our local markets, because we find that by working with local officials and authorities, that is the best way, actually, for us to drive growth and create a sustainable network. We would point to places like Bristol as the model of the kind of way forward for us, and we really believe that this approach can be completely consistent with the government's ambitions for a northern powerhouse. It's going to be a challenge and is a challenge for the industry to make it plain to the politicians that this is the best way forward. But we think we are creating the profile that would support that in places like South Yorkshire and Bristol. So finally, rail. Well, as Chris has already pointed out, we had a very strong year in rail. I've done very well. We've stabilized our position with the direct award in First Great Western and to a lesser extent in TPE. It's undeniable. We're very disappointed. We weren't an early winner in the refranchising program of the DST, but we're also mindful of the fact that two-thirds of the value is still yet to be franchised and will come out over the next 5 years. And we just have to continue our approach, disciplined bidding, and putting forward bids that are deliverable and that we believe will support the company going forward. I said it before and I'll say it again, we're putting a lot of money in these bus businesses to turn them around. That is the key management challenge, and that's been the deficiency in the company. We can't put all that investment at risk with some bid we can't deliver just because we want to have a good headline one day. We're going to stick to the disciplined bidding we have delivered to date, and we believe we will have a future in the rail industry. But it's also, it's not news to anyone, the longer that takes, obviously the longer we'll be delayed in getting back to the 100 million objective we set ourselves over time. So in summary, our view is it was a really solid year, and we did hit our marks such that it renews our confidence and bolsters our confidence in hitting our medium-term targets that we've already outlined with you. You know, in any multi-year plan, you encounter things you didn't expect, and you change things around, and you just have to adapt to what you're facing. And that happened this year. I mean, transit and rail had to make up for Greyhound. And in the current year, we're looking at a reversal. We're looking at where our non-rail businesses will largely offset the reduction in profits as a result of ScotRail and First Capital Connect cycling out of our results. But even the fact that we're at this stage and taking that position, you can see this as something of a turning point for the company, because the businesses that consume all the capital are finally on a trajectory to pay for themselves, to underpin driving total shareholder return rather than simply being supported by rail. Now, don't get me wrong. We like rail. We want more rail. We will have a future in rail. But going forward, it's going to be an accelerant to our results. It isn't going to underpin them and be a necessary condition. So we face a year that will be very tough, but as ever, they all are. But we approach it with some renewed confidence. Now, before I turn to questions, I would be remiss if I didn't comment on the announcement today that Chris has notified the board that he wants to pull back from an executive role. And I really, on behalf of myself and on behalf of the whole company, want to thank Chris for he's worked through some very challenging circumstances side by side with us all. He's done excellent work. I couldn't have asked for more from him, nor been more pleased with all that he's done. And I just want to thank him on my own behalf and on behalf of the company. Now, our continuing success is important to Chris, as he will tell you. So he is going to stay and work with us through the transition, so it's not goodbye as yet. And you'll all have plenty of opportunity to continue to work for him, work with him as we go forward. So with that, but thank you very much, Chris. I'd be happy to open it up to questions.
Hi, it's James Hollins at Nomura. Three questions, please. The first one is on Greyhound. Relative to CapEx of $50 million last year, so just wondering if you give some guidance on your plans for that business. Obviously, the low fuel environment, whether the investment in that business comes off a bit until fuel starts to rise again. The second one is on UK Bus. perhaps give an update on what we're seeing in Manchester in terms of competitive pressure in that market. And I think you alluded to some cost pressures, clearly we know all about, but are they getting worse in terms of new drivers, et cetera? And the final one is on student. Should we expect the end of this bid season another 90% retention rate for the bid season, or would it be a different number? Thanks.
So I take the first one, Tim?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, on the overall CapEx program, we've talked about broadly 400 million a year being spent over this period that we're going through the transformation. As we talked about when we were presenting, the majority of that is going into student and bus, but still with some into the other divisions. So Greyhound tends to be one of the smaller divisions. But looking at the level of demand, I would expect it to be slightly less in the coming year than it was the 50 million in the previous year, partly because of the demand, but also partly because we've got to the end of the major period of refurbishment of that fleet. So we've been buying new fleet, we've also been refurbishing them. I was expecting it to come down a little bit anyway, but it will come back down a little bit more because of where demand is. But again, it will flex very much as we see how the economy is changing, principally driven by the fuel price over the coming months.
Yeah, it's true. We are through the recapitalization of the fleet, so we have reduced our new bus order because of the lack of growth. That has already happened.
That's happened.
On UK bus in Manchester, obviously Manchester's a lot of pieces moving around there, given the ambitions of changing regulation there and the Northern Powerhouse and all the rest of it. It is a very competitive environment. We think it is the existence of that competition that is something that is serving the public very well there. I think the recovery of our operations there and the improvement in quality is so dramatic over the last 2 years that even the local officials would support that statement. And, you know, it remains very competitive. As while we are mostly in the north and stagecoaches in the south, we both run some cross-city services that compete, and I would expect that to continue. The cost pressures, we do have cost pressures on drivers in UK bus. It isn't the significant, I mean, it's something we constantly have to work at, but it's not as significant as the driver shortages we've been seeing in the U.S., which have hit student, and we've even started to see it in transit to some extent. But as I said, we're not using that as an excuse. It's just something we have to causes us to drive even more aggressive pricing. The student retention rate, we, just as we did last year when we had 90, this year we are targeting an 80% retention rate. That's what we targeted last year, and that's what we would expect to see, and so far are seeing through the 60% of the business we've priced so far.
Damien Burrow, Royal Bank of Canada. Two questions, please. First of all, in the press release, it talks about some initial Greyhound pilots where you've made some changes. Could you talk a little bit more about them and what you've seen, how that's potentially affected the bottom line? And then I'm assuming they must have gone quite well, given you're targeting a summer rollout into what's your peak season. So anything you can share on that would be good. And then secondly, in UK bus, year on year, the second half margin up 1.3 percentage points. To hit the 10%, you've got to do 4.2 percentage points in 2 years. Could you talk through a little bit about what you think the key accelerators are to the margin development in the next 24 months? Is it price? Is it volume? Is it cost? I assume it's a bit of all of those, but if you could give us more detail, that would be great. Thank you.
On the Greyhound pilots, yeah. So, obviously, we have two big pilots. They're called Greyhound Express and Bolt Bus. But this is really referring to the fact that we've taken some of the practices that we hope will be manifested in algorithms that will work automatically out of the machine, and we've applied them on individual routes. And what you're really trying to do is a couple things. You're trying to change the demand, react to the demand curve to change your prices in a dynamic way, in a way Greyhound has never done in the past, for the purpose of moving people to other buses so that you don't run extra sections on the busy times and you move people. And what we've found is that happened, which was very gratifying, that there's a reason to go. But this is largely more on the back of the envelope than the system we need to do this all the time. Because remember what's different. Bolt Bus, Greyhound Express, and even Megabus are self-contained systems. That's why they can do this now. Greyhound has this giant trip system that can, you know, move people between any of 42,000 nodes. I mean, a much more complex bit of math than even airlines face. And it's about having the tools that allow that to happen almost automatically. You know, which you're constantly having it react to the formulas and the disciplines that are looking at that demand curve in a short period of time. Right now, they virtually don't look at it at all. I mean, there are some variation in tickets, but not of the kind that we're hoping to install and keep active over time. So that's really what's happened there. On UK Bus, the further improvement we need really comes from three things. One is it's half efficiency and half growth. We'd already said that before. But the accelerate you're referring to is really repositioning the business. So to the extent we, not beyond routes or in areas that aren't responding and are actually being a drag to the overall number you're looking at, plainly we will move faster to achieving our goal. And that's what I was referring to, that we're constantly keeping this under review to make sure that we are being as flexible as we should be in concentrating our resources.
Just wait for the mic.
Good morning, Edward Stanford from Lazarus. Just picking up on the labor issues a little, if I could ask a sort of related question. Could you give some idea as to whether or not driver turnover has changed significantly over the last year and how you see that and what your experience is of wage inflation? And secondly, you mentioned the political issues surrounding the Northern Powerhouse. In your conversations you've had, do you think that it is a realistic possibility that bus franchising can be headed off by the industry, or how do you see the state of affairs at the moment?
Well, turnover has ticked up a bit. I mean, that's part of the challenge that we have, and certainly in dealing with this subject, retention is something we're paying as much attention to as hiring, because it's the bringing people in, it's the training them, it's getting them their CDL, their commercial driver license, and then they go off and work for the local bus, the other local bus company. And I mean, so it's keeping the people in-house that is a challenge and we are paying attention to. And this is an example of where the group has demonstrates clear synergy, because we have a very good hiring applicant tracking system in our UK bus operation, and we've taken that and we've moved it over to student, and we'll be moving it into transit. And it's that application of best practice that we think allows us to accelerate the rate of change and improvement in the business. One of the reasons why we talk about the driver shortage issue being so critical in student, though, is it's a very different kind of business. And a lot of your businesses, whether it's running a bus company or your rail business, just to force efficiency, there's always some tension in how much of an extra board you have. You know, you just don't want to have a lot of excess resources. And for short periods of time, you know, you're willing to put up with that tension. You can't do that in the school bus business. I mean, if you say you're moving the kids, you're moving the kids. So that means if you have to bus people in and put them in a hotel, that's what you do, so that you just never fail, because it otherwise would destroy your reputation. So a slight tick up in the school bus business is a really big deal. And it's the difference between a 1.5% shortage and a 2.5% shortage, and suddenly you've got a big problem. And that's why we talk about this so much. As far as the Northern Powerhouse, well, obviously, I don't want to be making any headlines now because we have a lot of discussions to have. But it is quite plain that a franchising system spread beyond London would be horrifically expensive. You know, it's a £76 per passenger subsidy in London versus about £18 or £19 the rest of the country. London is very unique in its growth, the fact that it's congestion charging, all of the bus priority measures that are in place, and the growth of its own economy. If you were to extend that to other markets throughout the UK, I don't know where all that money is going to come from. And the fact of the matter is the cost profile of the private companies is just better than what you would find in municipally operated operations. So kind of the reality that no one's confronted yet is the cost of all of this. What's important, however, is not to argue with people. What's important is for us to find out what it is they want and make sure that in our plans and developing our local networks, we give them that. And that's what we're doing in Bristol. That's what we're doing in South Yorkshire. We just need to work with the folks in Manchester to show they can get to their northern powerhouse without doing something that they're going to regret over the longer term. That's why we talk about quality partnerships rather than a quality contract. We can still do what they want. We just have to retain the commercial flexibility to do it efficiently.
Edward, you asked on wage inflation.
Thanks.
Yeah, I'm clearly not going to get into individual rates and individual regions because that has some impact on our bargaining ability. But as you'd expect, it's creeping up a little bit. But I would say across the whole business on both sides of the Atlantic, it's bang in line with what we expected it to be. So when we've been setting prices, increases, and revenues and negotiating various contracts, then it's in line with that. So that's not, it's not giving us a, oh, major, we've got a big hole there.
Good morning. It's Jolyon Wellington from JP Morgan. I've got three questions, please. One on student, one on bus, and one on rail. I'll kick off with first student. Just on the $30 million extra cost saving, I think you have to get, you've done 19 so far. Can you just touch on roughly where those cost savings are going to come from? And I guess just in light of some of the other questions about driver shortages, how are you going to contend with that in terms of reducing that cost element? And then in UK bus, just on the efficiency savings, I just wonder how you're thinking about fuel costs. I note in the back of the presentation, it shows you've hedged forward a fifth of requirements forward to 2018. So you are presumably going to see some benefit on the cost base from that. Just wondering how much of that you'll have to sort of pass back to passengers. And then thirdly, on rail, can you just give an idea as to the magnitude and timing of the cost of the rail bids, please? Thank you.
Student, the further efficiencies that we have to achieve, they largely come from the same categories, because when we talked about the application of the M1 standardization approach across student, it's been about driving consistency across those 500 or so locations. We don't have anywhere near universal application and consistency, and it's just continuing to force that through the system. I mean, we've always emphasized that, you know, we fluctuate between 50-65% compliance in whether it's the way you're managing your drivers, the way you're managing your exceptions. The one area that we've made continuous improvements in going to lean systems in engineering, we still haven't seen the level of savings in engineering across the piece that we have seen in some parts of the business. And that's a point of continuous focus for us. Already mentioned how we're dealing with the drivers and that we've brought in a different system for bringing them in the door, and hopefully we're working on retention. The other thing we're doing is, if you follow the other transport industries in the United States, you'll notice driver shortages is a problem for everybody. I don't care whether you ship chemicals or what you do, finding drivers is a problem. So it's very important that we not compete within that pool and that we focus on the people who want the different lifestyle, because being a student driver is a very different thing. You know, it's a part-time job. It's a few hours in the morning, a few hours in the afternoon. So making sure that we're efficiently targeting retirees, housewives, these make up the bulk of who drives our buses, and we just have to make sure we're reaching out to those communities successfully.
So if I do the hedging, and John, you're referring up to the slide at the back. So essentially in the near term, over the coming 16 and the rest of this year and 16, we're north of 90% hedged. And again, for those who don't know, what we do is we have a continuing hedging program, so we're building these every month out into the future. So there's no short-term impact of the fuel prices. And just to be absolutely clear, you haven't got the same situation that you have with Greyhound, so we're not seeing any impact on demand shifting to, say, for example, the car because of the low fuel prices. So in theory, over time, you're absolutely right. Once you get to those out years, which are only approximately 50% hedged, assuming that oil prices stayed or petrol pump prices stayed the same, then you would see a benefit. But the million-dollar question at that point is then what happens in terms of pressure to reflect that in fare prices and so on. And that really just depends upon what's happening in the market. So I certainly wouldn't count that as a benefit at this stage. We'll see how the market evolves.
Budget for bid
costs. Bid costs, it varies on individual bids. Obviously, the requirements, we spent £15 million in 14-15 on bid costs, and I would expect to spend in that region maybe a little bit less in the coming year.
Hi, good morning. Rashika Sujani from Barclays. I just wanted to touch on CapEx a little bit further in your two bigger divisions, so UK Bus and Student. In UK Bus, you previously talked about it being a big year for technology. Could you kind of give us an update on where you are there and what's left to go? And then secondly, in Student, 5% price increases is clearly pleasing, but I just wondered, has there been any change in the CapEx profile of the recent renewals? Thank you.
What did the UK Bus one?
Pardon?
The UK Bus one. Technology. I didn't get the question.
Sorry, can you?
Could you repeat?
Yeah.
I didn't get the UK bus question.
Yeah, sure. Now, you previously talked about it being a big year for kind of investment in technology. Could you just talk a bit about what you've done recently and whether kind of what is left to do still on that front?
It's a big year for the whole industry because we believe that one of the reasons there's frustration and people refer to the London model and put at risk the successful model that's applied everywhere else is because of ticketing. That people ever are across the country see Oyster and they all want Oyster, which they should. Of course, it's our frustration that one of the reasons why you don't have that ticketing system across the country is because of all these competing schemes and the lack of standardization. So one of the things all the major bus companies have done have come together and are determined to just deliver, and we are delivering this year, and it's a base system everywhere. Because we think that if you can take the revenue collection friction out of the debate, largely you'll find that people are reflecting how satisfied they are with the level of service, and that is going exactly to schedule. Where we already have mobile ticketing on all of our networks throughout the country. So that is where you can get your ticket right on your phone, and it's been very successful, and the take-up's been very encouraging. But we'll also have the capacity to deliver multi-operator smart tickets in all the major urban areas, and this is really an industry initiative, and it's going off the schedule. So I still think, and I would still stand by the prediction, that this year will be an important year for technology in the bus business.
And in student, hopefully I've understood your question correctly, it's the key there is on the retention rates, because when you don't retain a contract, one of the benefits that we have from being such a large business is that we can then cascade those buses that get freed up from that contract onto other contracts. So given that we commented earlier that the overall retention rate in the 2014 bidding season was around 90%, we'd expect it to be in the 80s for the current bidding season. I'd expect the CapEx to be a little bit lower in the current year, in 15-16, compared with 14-15. Does that answer? I just want to make sure I've answered your question.
Yeah, I mean, well, I want to be clear on this. Our CapEx last year was higher than we planned because of this. We planned to have an 80% retention rate. That's what we plan again, because we think it is by cascading these buses to more remunerative districts. It's one of the things that drives the margin.
Morning, Joe Spina from Jefferies. Just two questions. Firstly, on the contribution of Capital Connect and ScotRail, can you give a sense of what needs to drop out in terms of the loss of those contracts? Sorry. And secondly, on the cash flows, Chris, you were talking a little bit more about how they shape up looking forward. I think the guidance for a number of years has year in, year out been for a kind of a broadly neutral cash flow outlook. As you look forward from here, do you think there's many more years of that kind of outlook, or do you think we're now near the point where you can start to expect some cash flows to come in?
Okay. If I pick up both of them?
Yeah, okay. Because we've all been somewhat coy with the individual companies.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to go into individual ones because there's a number of moving parts, including the ones that you've just mentioned, but also TPE. So overall, what we've guided on is that the overall rail profit for the year of 75 million pounds will drop into the high 30s is a broad steer. Is what is the guidance that I've given at the pre-close and what I also gave back in January, and there's no change to that guidance. Similarly, there's no change, I add, to any of the guidance that I've given on the other divisions. In terms of cash flow, again, just to emphasize what we've said, to be absolutely clear, we said across the 3 years, 13-14, 14-15, and 15-16, excluding the rail end of rail franchise outflows, we expected the cash for those 3 years to be net flat. As again, as I said when I was speaking, in 13-14, it was positive 27 million. In 14-15, positive 39. That doesn't mean there's going to be a big outflow in 15-16 to offset that, which is why I was specific in saying that in 15-16, I'd expect it to be flat to slightly positive. So net-net across those 3 years, a little bit better than we anticipated when we started this program. And then when you get into the out years after that, because then, obviously, as the transformation programs deliver, margins go up, EBITDA goes up, with the other comments I made about the rest being essentially flat, that's when you start to generate, or we would expect to generate, significantly more cash.
So we do see it turning.
Yes. I should have just said yes, sorry.
Yeah. And sorry, as part of that, I think you talked about the CapEx creditor unwinding. Can you just remind us what the dynamics are there and how that plays through?
Yeah, we've talked, and again, this is a problem that I inherited on, particularly on engines within the student business. And it was a fairly large creditor that over the last few years has halved, but there's still around £50 million or about $70 million to go in that unwind. That will happen over this year we're in at the moment and next year, and then that will be out of the system.
You know, and it just put us in a position of
normal.
Having to follow a procurement policy that might not have been what we wanted to do. So to remove the sword of Damocles, we just had to get off of it. Any other questions? One more.
Darren Hook from Barclays. Just a quick question on your credit rating. Are you expecting a stabilization of the low triple B rating following these results and given the outlook that you will have communicated to the agency?
I think that's a question for the rating agencies, but and you'd normally expect them at this time of the year to look at our results, and clearly they are. All I will say is we've talked before about the FFO to net debt ratio, and S&P have been very clear that the target for that is 23% and above, and under our calculations, we're way above that. But as I've said previously, that calculation is not only the number at the year end, it's also a prediction of what it will be in the future, and that's just how their calculations work. And again, they don't fully share with us how much proportion they take of each of the future years. So I think it's best to wait and see what they say over the coming weeks.
All right. Thank you all very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.